hamster with a blunt penknife would do it quicker. Until
I do the commentary for part six of Hamster of the Planet of the Spiders for Hamster with a Blunt Penknife. Hello, I'm Cy, and I once had a phone call from the Great One, would you believe? I couldn't believe it. There I was in my kitchen, phone rang, and the Great One had phoned to call me up to say that her brain was expanding, and that was it. And then the phone went dead. And then my boyfriend rang up slightly after that. Whether the two were connected, I will never know. But this was at the time when I was getting letters from the Macra and from Aurac. So, you know, very interesting time. In
I
life.
Thought you were saying that Maureen Morris phoned you up and
no.
randomly left that message.
No, this was Dan Hogarth.
Right, okay, I get it. I knew something. So, to do a dreadful
welcome back to A Hamster with a Blunt Penknife, the Doctor Who commentary podcast, where we are about to finish off an era 8 months after we started.
Before we do that, though, you can't just leave us hanging there. What did Aurac say in his letter?
He swore a lot.
Obviously.
There was a cartoon of him saying piss flaps.
He also detailed in great detail as well, a map that would lead you to discovering which consisted of two corridors.
Up and down.
Was it done in felt pen?
It pretty well was.
Yeah. But fortunately, at that point, the best Travis was still around, so we were in good shape.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, here we are at the end.
It's been a long time getting from there to here.
Well, it has. It's been 8 months.
Nice, yeah.
And most Pertwee six-parters feel like they last 8 months. This one actually has.
I'll say the only two commentaries that have had a gap this long, even our web planet wasn't this long.
No, it wasn't.
And the only other one was another six-parter, Colony in Space, where I've done three episodes and I still haven't finished it. And that was recorded a year and a half ago.
Oh, my God.
He goes, oh, don't worry, we'll do something else. He was so bored by it, I'm sure. Hmm. The climactic end of Jon Pertwee, gentlemen.
Yeah, so 5 years, our longest-running Doctor at this point. Children wouldn't have maybe not even known a different Doctor.
Ratings were soaring. He was very popular.
Mm-hmm. And this is it. A whole generation are going to be scarred by this Doctor leaving.
How much do you buy into Pertwee going in to see the head of drama and asking for a pay rise? Because Barry Letts says that's bullshit.
I think it's a great story that Pertwee could spin. Pertwee's a master of a great story. And if he could rinse an anecdote out of something, he would do. Because he's a professional. He knows that people are going to ask him about this. So he's not just going to say, oh, I just decided to leave, because that's not dramatic enough. So he's going to spin a big yarn about it, isn't he?
Is this the era of the raconteurs? Because you've got Pertwee who can spin a yarn, Terence Dix who can spin a yarn, Katie Manning can certainly spin a yarn.
Yeah, well, these are all, and I think they all get this from Pertwee,
yeah,
who is the master of doing this, because they've probably been regaled by 5 years of Pertwee's tall tales.
Trouble is, though, right, on these commentaries, it's so embarrassing because you've got Barry Letts there, the man of ultimate integrity, pointing out when everyone's talking bullshit all the time.
He's having none of it.
Are you sure? He says, Katie Manning in Planet of Dogs, are you sure? Because I seem to remember it was this. And she sort of laughs really awkwardly and goes, no, I think it was that. And he was going, yeah, all right. I love Barry Letts.
I love his, he just isn't having any of it. He's just right there to debunk all these stories and say, no, if John wanted a rise, he would have come to me and I would have decided out of my budget, because I was the producer, I could decide this.
I've got a big question for both of you then that I'd like you to answer. And we'll start with Fraser, because he's been very quiet for the first couple of minutes. Is this the point where this team should have disbanded? Was there more could they have done more with the Third Doctor and Sarah? Could Barry and Terrence have gone on to do more great work? Or was this a good time to get off?
This is a good time to get off, I think. I mean, could Barry and Terrence done more? Absolutely, yes. You hear Barry Letts talk in the making of this, and he says, you know, we were just kind of running out of ideas, but you know, we didn't realise that we were, you know, another production team would have had these scripts pitched to them and would have done something with them. We were saying, no, we've done that, we've done that, we've done that. It's getting kind of same as. So I think they could have just went on and on, you know, doing what they could be doing. Pertwee, you know, he could probably have went on longer as well. You know, what you've got to think is, you know, without Katie Manning and without Roger Delgado, is it going to be the same? And yeah, probably not. I know.
Can you imagine Pertwee in the Ark in space?
Well, that's the other question is, you know, obviously Katie's left already. Roger Delgado's passed away, unfortunately. Barry and Terrence have decided they're moving on. If you believe the John Pertwee tale that he went and asked for a big raise and they said no, so he left, you know, the what if is, what if they said, oh yeah, cool, yeah, there you go, there's an extra 20%, and he's kind of lumbered with season 12. What would John Pertwee look like in a Hinchcliffe and Holmes era?
It's fascinating, isn't it? Because we don't get this terribly often at this point. Everything has been so stable behind the scenes. And I can understand completely that Pertwee deciding to go because Barry and Terrence were going absolutely makes sense, because he's someone who very much needs his comfort team behind him. And I think he would have... It would have been fascinating to see him with Hinchcliffe, because he would have been a bit on the back foot and he might have had to do things that his doctor hadn't done before, which would have been fascinating. It would have been really interesting to see where they took the Third Doctor, in the same way people often say, what if Stephen Moffat had had David Tennant for his first year?
Yeah.
And that difference, or Chris Chibnall had had Peter Capaldi for a year, you know.
Colin
and
going into Cartmel.
Exactly. All of those what ifs, you just don't know what would have happened. I mean, I think this is probably the time to go. But interestingly, Terrence is the one who says, I actually didn't want to leave. He said, but I felt like I had to, because I might appear as yesterday's man with someone, with a new producer, and you don't want to be the one who's sort of left behind.
I don't think Hinchcliffe would have objected, though. I think Hinchcliffe would have worked with Terrence Dix.
Because Terrence is so resolutely professional and so good at his job. And so much of this era works because Terrence has worked damn hard to make sure the scripts work and are watertight.
Yeah, I think obviously the main success for me of both eras, of both the Third Doctor and the Fourth Doctor, you know, 12, 13, 14, Hinchcliffe era, is how much on the same page Barry Letts and Terrence Dix were, and how much Philip Hinchcliffe and Bob Holmes were on the same page. They are making the show together. They are not, you know, we come to Eric Saywood and John Nathan Turner and they are making different shows.
Yeah.
You know, Saywood is trying to write and script edit a drama, whereas JNT is making light entertainment. You know, Hinchcliffe and Holmes are both making drama. Letts and Dix are both making light entertainment. You know, they are working together. So to put Terrence Dix with Hinchcliffe and say, well, you know, that would be a bit of a clash of styles. Yes, Terrence Dix would have been utterly professional and, you know, and done the best, but would it have been as successful as having someone totally sympathetical with him?
No, because his sensibilities are slightly different to Robert Holmes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But do you know what? I think his stories would be a lot plotted a lot tighter than those Holmes stories.
Probably have great endings.
Yeah, because the Hinchcliffe Holmes endings are generally pretty bad.
But, you know, you're trading off. I mean, you know, Bob Holmes is the master of the witty dialogue and the world building and the, you know, the character.
Great eccentric characters, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you kind of lose that as well. So the horses for courses. I mean, both eras are utterly magnificent, but in their own special way.
But well, then, I do think it's time to leave UNIT and Earth behind and do something different. We've had 5 years of coming back to this, and actually you do need to keep the show fresh. And I don't think they would have divorced Pertwee from UNIT ever.
That's the funny thing. I mean, Letts and Dix decided within the first series, within season 7, they decided they didn't want the Doctor to be Earthbound. And it takes them 5 years. It takes them 3 years to get the ability to fly his own TARDIS back. And you just kind of wonder why it took them so long.
Well, I like that, though. I like how it's staggered, how it's not easy. Because then when that moment hits in the Three Doctors, it means something.
Yeah, it's earned. We've been the long way round to get there.
And then you get Carnival of Monsters and it feels so fresh.
Yeah, and suddenly
it?
they're it's like they're let out.
Yeah.
And off they go.
The weird thing is we're talking about Pertwee potentially being in stories like Ark in Space and Genesis of the Daleks. I actually think, and I do really like Robox. I think it's a witty script. It's got funny characters. Sarah Jane gets a great role. But Tom Baker just feels so weird in that setting.
Yes,
with those characters.
But that's what the story is setting out to do. It is setting out a new Doctor who isn't going to have the same relationship with UNIT as the old Doctor did. And Tom is playing every scene in the anti-Pertwee way.
Yeah,
he's thinking, what would Pertwee do? Well, then I'm just going to lie on this bench because Pertwee wouldn't do that. I'm going to sit with my feet up in a Jeep because he wouldn't do that. All of those things.
He's taking the piss in the most spectacular way, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is kind of what works about it. That it's really jarring.
And I think it works because Tom is coming in with so much energy, whereas it would be just another UNIT story if Pertwee was there. And it'd just be another season opener. And we've done all of this.
Weirdly enough, I think had Pertwee gone out on Robot, which is sort of action-adventure, that wouldn't have felt as satisfying as this, which is more of a character drama. It's a bit more thoughtful than that. The pace is a bit more measured. I don't know. It feels like a sensitive way to bow out, especially this episode.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this story is geared to exit Pertwee.
Yes.
It's
that's its main.
That's
its
main
thing, isn't it? It's its main reason for being.
Absolutely. I mean, if you take, you know, the Doctor leaving at the end of it out of this story, if you move this story to second in the season or third or whatever, it's, you know, we wouldn't have nearly as much love and affection for it as we do.
You're right. Yeah.
You know, Robot works, like you say, because it is the new Doctor in the old Doctor's shoes. You know, it's saying this is the exact story that you're used to. It's a very run-of-the-mill story, but what elevates it is having that new Doctor in it. You know, to say this is someone doing different. This is how different things are going to be now. And we're using the old to juxtapose the new and make it that contrast between Tom Baker and John Pertwee absolutely crystal clear to you. So that's why that works. And
that point about being in the middle of the season, we wouldn't be forgiving of that chase in episode 2 because that would feel indulgent. But because it's his last hurrah, let's let him have it.
We wouldn't be as forgiving
as the Metabolis 3 sequences, because in this we know this grand finale is coming. So you sort of sit, you ride it. You know, whereas if it was like Monster of Peloton, you just go, oh, God, what is this?
Just get on with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What are you going to say? Someone was going to say something then.
I was going to say, should we get on with it?
Yes, let's get on with it.
And I was going to say, we were quite forgiving of the big chase that takes up episode 5 of Invasion of the Dinosaurs.
Oh, I mean, I think I would be quite forgiving of this chase, you know, if it came, you know, in, you know, third story. I think the chase is the chase. It's the chase. Mm-hmm. It's just great, daft, glorious fun, regardless of whether it was in this story or another one. So
what I will say is I think episode 6 of Planet of the Spiders has some of the most startling character moments in this entire era.
Oh,
where
God, yeah.
The Doctor talks about his greed, certainly his death, and it is a death.
Yeah.
And they're character moments for the Doctor, which we don't often get.
It's development for the Doctor, which we don't often get. Well, should we watch it?
Yes. Why not?
Okay.
Now let's give it another 8 minutes.
Right. Shut up, you.
In 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go. One last time for those. Oh, I love those spears of light. I mean, that's gorgeous.
Imagine if that terrible Delaware theme was being used, though. Terrible.
Funk.
Mind you, it's not too dissimilar from the Colin Baker trial theme, is it?
It's not in places.
Oh,
look,
so
the reprise is completely different. What's going on?
I have no idea. Well,
it's the same so far, don't we? You're talking about Simon. Look, there's
unbelievable that we've cut back 10 minutes.
it's you know, it's just the back end, the back quarter of episode 5.
Mm-hmm.
Never before have we seen a show in such time crisis that we've had to play the last 10 minutes again.
Mm-hmm.
Megalos says, hold my beer.
But doesn't it cut out some scenes? It cuts out some scenes, doesn't it, as well? Yeah. It's very weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they've borrowed from the next episode for like 3 episodes now, it gets to like the last episode, but we can't borrow from episode 7 because there isn't one. So we're just going to have to put some new stuff in.
Fair bless them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the cliffhanger episode 5 should be the bit where they realise Sarah's got the spider on her back.
Yes.
But
absolutely.
There's just not enough else.
Is that what it was going to be?
It should be.
That would have been great.
I think it's, I don't know if it was what was planned, but that's the obvious cliffhanger.
It feels like it, doesn't it? Yeah.
But and you know, there's just not enough in 6 to...
Where she says, where she's got the spider on her back and she says that she's frightened, she plays that for real.
Right.
She is. Yeah. That's why she was a terrible arachnophobe.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to talk about those rehearsal scenes, are you?
Yeah. Pertwee's little toys, having to bring in slightly bigger toy spiders every day, because otherwise she would have just absolutely not been able to do the scene with the spider on her back.
Which is what he says.
Said, I wouldn't have been very professional as an actress doing
that. She goes, I'm bloody acting, she says in the commentary. I'm all right with a fake spider, John. Like, bless him. Oh, look, there's Fraser.
That's me. Stop it.
Fraser, I've got to say, though, you're way prettier than Aurum there.
Well, got a better haircut.
And he's got terrible teeth. He's got a big gap in his teeth.
Yeah, 70s teeth, 70s hair, 70s specs, 70s turtleneck.
Oh, man. You're retro, you are. Vintage. Yes.
Give it another 50 years and, you know, they'll be the 2074 version of me.
Yeah, the Fraser Gregory look.
Yep. Good day, look what I found on YouTube. What's YouTube? That's what old people used to watch. Look what I found. It's a person that looks exactly like me that says stop it all the time.
Look at how that's directed with Sarah in the foreground there.
I was just thinking that. I don't know if it's because I'm so up close to the screen for this, but I've never noticed that before, that she's foregrounded and she's acting brilliantly.
And the Doctor is throwing her looks as well, so he knows. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he was paying attention last week.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting as well.
She's doing that so brilliantly.
I must give it to me.
Sees it. What's come over you? What's going on?
And that feels big. Sarah Jane shooting the Doctor.
That's your cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, what a shame. Just have a longer episode and a shorter episode, for God's sakes.
And this magical bit where he says, "See through my eyes," and the spider appears.
Oh great. And he goes, "What a perfect good line. Grief."
Pertwee is so good at a good grief. And here's the cliffhanger. So...
Hasn't someone done a super cut of all the good griefs?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. It's great.
Madeley done a
good grief. I think it's about 5.5 hours long, I think.
Yeah.
It's up there with Tom's Watts. There's a super cut of his.
What? Good grief, Dara.
Just below all of the Packers in the invasion.
Oh, someone's done that as well, haven't they? I swear. Okay. And there's definitely a Benny supercut from Orphan 55. Yeah. Oh, yeah, look, here we are now in the cliffhanger. It's very odd. I feel like someone's put together a jigsaw in the wrong order.
But I think this is probably the right order, and the last episode was the wrong.
Thing is, what the fuck would we know if we were watching this on original transmission? You wouldn't even remember.
You wouldn't have remembered.
You'd just be watching this. So, you know, it's worth remembering always that these were not meant to be binge watched.
No.
As a whole.
You'd remember Tommy kicking that fellow up the arse.
Yeah. God, they do shoot me. Like, look at her eyes. Yeah, I think that's great. I wish that spider on her back twitched, though.
Yeah.
Somehow it looks even worse when that bug's on Donna's back and turn left.
Well, that's your modern day comparison, isn't it?
But actually, Donna plays those scenes absolutely terrified as well, doesn't she? Mm-hmm. It's we've been lucky with the actresses they've scored playing
their
companions.
Look at Liz Sladen there. She is acting her socks off.
Well, and she has to sort of go between being the spider and being Sarah. Well, look, I was mesmerised by it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even hear it. Can you hear it?
No. And she's writing close up. And then we go, that line, I'm frightened.
Of course, Fraser, it's worth remembering, this is the period where Cy Hart hated Sarah Jane.
Shh.
The entire classic run.
Those days are gone.
Did you not love the way those spider legs all came up there?
Yeah.
Like a flower. Can we dispose of these boring characters now, please?
I think we're nearly done with them.
Oh, thank goodness.
No, they've got the...
Oh, they're going to make a circle, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the trade-off is you get these wonderful scenes where he's talking about his greed for knowledge, which is great, and where he realises who Campo is.
Yeah.
But the trade-off is we don't have enough time to give to the Metabilia scenes, so we go back, and very quickly they've all been taken over, and then that's dealt with in about 2.5 seconds.
But the annoying thing is we do have the time to run that. That's the frustrating thing, is if you cut a little bit of padding from further down in the domino rally, and then have the cliffhanger where it should have been, you could give yourself 2 or 3 more scenes in Metabolus with spiders and what's his face? Not Blake. Gareth. Gareth.
Chuar. Ravalis.
Yeah.
And
Arak.
I want to say Gareth Thomas, but it's not.
It's Gareth Hunt.
That's him. You know, you could do something proper with that, because, you know, they run away and it's almost, you don't need to go back to Metabolus, because that feels very much wrapped up. That feels wrapped up in a very Doctor Who sort of way.
Or like, just to the caves.
You've had your revolution. Awesome. Thank you very much. We're going off now. You look after yourselves. Everything will be fine. It feels, you know, that's classic Doctor Who.
But for once, I'll take the trade-off, because these scenes are great, and scenes on Metabilia 3 would not be great. So. No.
And this scene where the Doctor suddenly realised it's his guru.
To borrow a TARDIS, Sy was naughty, to say the least.
Exactly.
Naughty.
Borrowed, eh?
And it's lovely. It's really, it's just really lovely and full of warmth.
Isn't that the first use of regenerated as well?
Yeah. I regenerated and came to Earth, yeah.
Barry Letts was a trendsetter, wasn't he?
Uh-huh.
We may get something else for the first time in this one that has just come up recently.
Oh, yeah, a bi-generation.
Yes.
It's not a bi-generation in this, is it?
Well, because you've got Choji, who's the projection of the Doctor of Campo,
yes.
Who's there.
Yeah.
In the same way as Legopolis has got the Watcher, who is the future Doctor.
Yeah, I never thought about that. That's good reading.
Oh, is Lupton still in it? Oh, there he is.
Oh, he's alive. Yeah, see, like,
I'm just here to comment
the only
on the action now.
That's really important now is Pertwee, you know, is the Doctor, the Crystal, and the Great One, and the rest is just bumf around it.
Uh-huh. It is.
And it's bad bumf, but it is bumf. But
it could have been better. Like I say, I think if you have a bit more solid scenes on, you know, the metabolis with everyone, you know, you could really do something better there. If maybe you have your revolution in part six rather than part five, you know, think, right, now we've got the magic stones, now we're going to go in and do that and not have the sort of kind of fake out of then, oh yes, we've actually been took over by the spiders. I think that would probably be worked a lot better.
I do love the fact that Campo is so is not scared that he's regenerating, is he? It's like Jodie Whittaker in Power of the Doctor.
Yeah.
He's really just resigned to his fate.
And it's
going to
be all right. Yeah.
I like that a lot.
And I like that he sees completely through the Doctor.
Because really, the drama is the Doctor regenerating, you know?
Yeah. But it reassures the audience by seeing, because it hasn't been seen for 5 years. So you're reassuring the audience that it will be okay. And look, if this happens to Campo and it's all right, then when it happens to the Doctor, it'll be okay.
I don't mean it's in any way a negative way, but Pertwee does look tired as well.
He does look tired and old.
Yeah, like something happened between recording the Time Warrior and Invasion of the Dinosaurs, but when he came back, it was like he'd aged 5 years.
Death to the Daleks, he looks quite...
Like, yeah.
I think he was having big trouble with his back at this point was in a lot of pain.
But that line he had there where he says, I have to go back.
Yeah.
I have to do it. Oh, it's fabulous.
Yeah, because he's got a responsibility.
Yeah.
Because he set all of this in motion.
What's great is the thing that's caused all of this is that hilarious comedy sequence in the Green Death.
Yes,
exactly. With the massive, you know, feet sweeping past.
Because he wanted the crystal and it was his greed for that.
If he hadn't studied art at St. Martin's College, he wouldn't have a thirst for knowledge.
No. But also, if he hadn't have got the TARDIS working again at the end of the Three Doctors, he never would have been able to go to Metabilius 3, and he would have survived this.
Yeah, and he wired in the coordinates into the programmer in the Green Death so that he was actually going to get there. So it sets all of this up.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's nice. It's neat.
And if they hadn't planned it, yeah, and I don't think they did. I think it was just luck that all of this came together like this.
Right, that's a point. You know, what happened to the giant bird? Would they not be like the predators of the spiders? Would they? Would you know, as
Great
soon as you get like
zapped them with her mind, Uja.
I mean, as soon as you get like a giant spider, it's like a giant bird, not just going to go, ooh, yonk.
Imagine that, right? You know, it all ends in a big explosion when the Great One goes up. Imagine if the ending was that bird swooping in, those big feet. Wow, it was set up last year.
Again.
You couldn't say it wasn't set up the previous year, though, could you?
All praise to the Great One.
I love this bit. I love Pertwee just swanning in and like having one last.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in charge.
Yeah.
Bitches. Sit down.
He's got to be humble in that sequence with Campo talking about his greed. He gets to be commanding here. Then he gets to be terrified.
Yes. So you're getting it all from Pertwee.
And then when he dies, the stillness of it as well. Mm-hmm. It's so moving. I think that's one of his best acted scenes in the show. Rightly so.
I love that line. It's, you've beaten us, Doctor. It is good that you will die.
And he will.
And
that's no idle threat.
He knows this is. He knows what's going to happen.
There's a good look of disgust on his face there.
Yep.
And then it's just out me way.
So, and then, no, Lupton is going to die soon, isn't he? Yeah. He dies now, yeah. Is it now?
Yeah.
Spoilers.
It's a shame because we did discuss in the first half of this just how effective Lupton was as a sort of pathetic
man. Yes, but he gets so sidelined as the story goes on.
He's utterly just put in the corner.
His plot function has finished, and there you go, he's done.
It's a very Eric Saywood ending for a character.
And if there was a fridge, Lupton would be in it.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
He's no longer in the cellar, Fraser. Well, actually, he might be in the cellar soon. Now he's dead.
Lupton has left the cellar.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Oh, here we go.
Here he goes.
Yeah, this really is a good episode.
Yeah, it really is.
It does come to... I'm not going to say it's a rousing conclusion, because it's not like especially dynamic, but it is
a proper conclusion, yeah.
So is this what's going to happen to Shuti Gatwa then when the 14th Doctor eventually, you know, needs to regenerate? Is Shuti then going to just disappear and reappear wherever? I mean, that could be embarrassing.
That would
He's
be
in the middle of something.
Yes, please. Oh, I love how doesn't he wakes up and he laughs and he's
you put this in your magazine, Sarah Jane Smith.
And she's smiling as well. Uh-huh. Oh, here we go. This fucking spider is terrifying.
Uh-huh.
It's the size of a cave, guys. Da, 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 da.
And there she is.
And Dudley's going crazy with the music.
Yeah, Dudley is selling it all, isn't he?
Yeah. Well, so it's a mixture of the size of it, which I think is very effectively done with him in there too.
Yeah.
The music and her insane voice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the fact she gets more and more insane and
that's
and
a real model, isn't it? That the crystal above her head and all of that, that was a real made
model.
Yeah,
it's all a model, yeah. It's basically the same as they're doing in Underworld. It's a model. But because you've got the spider actually in the model, it sells it a bit better for the CSO.
I mean, I know we can mock how this looks, but I could just imagine being like six watching this at the time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Until.
So what is it that goes wrong then?
Basically, it's a feedback. So as soon as she puts it in, the power will just keep building up and up and up, and it won't stop. And she's not going to be able to absorb it all.
Okay. I figured it was her own madness, you know, that created...
Pertwee brings it back down to a circuit.
Yeah.
Yeah, well. It's simple, man.
Mm-hmm.
You will destroy yourself. You waste a little time remaining to you. Oh, yeah. But that is kind of epic, isn't it? A cave of crystals, you know.
Absolutely.
And it's going to be in resonance with her mind, her mania.
Yeah, and just the size of her is.
The floaty crystal going through the air.
I am Tom. Leads.
And then she's like, ah!
It burns!
Look at her enormous abdomen. Yeah. Honestly, she could give birth to a lot of baby spiders.
Good.
And you're still trying to save her.
That is the most effective spider we've had, and it's the one that gets the least amount of screen time.
Yes.
Yeah, of course he is. Well, it's the Doctor.
It's the same.
Oh, is it? Oh, I didn't know that.
Sorry,
yeah, look.
The great all-powerful me.
I really love... Look at the shadows of the spider on the model and the way that the foot is going down on several levels.
Yeah. It just sells it, doesn't it?
It's terrific. I mean, Pertwee looks dreadful on several bows, but never mind. Half his head's vanished.
Well, that's the problem when you've got bouffant hair.
It's a shame they couldn't have just done a bit of location work. A little bit of Wookiee hole here, you know, would have gone a long way. Oh dear. They're in a terrible way, those spiders. And actually, I do think we get a good bang here.
Yep. Well, it's a purple era ending, isn't it? Where everything explodes.
But it's a mountain going up, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, we're doing the epic again.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's it. Them done.
I do wonder where all those 40-odd spiders went. Yeah, because some maggots were given out to people. Richard Franklin had one, and so did Katie Manning. Oh, here we go.
Yeah, it's a good explosion.
Slow motion explosions.
Uh-huh. Close up explosions.
Ooh. I mean, you know.
Bit of implosion.
And I love then, don't you just cut straight to Sarah sniffing his jacket? It's a lovely, intimate moment.
Just hugging the cloak.
Yeah. I'll do that with my mask closed, you know, when he ain't around sometimes. Aww. Yeah.
Oh, that's the brig. Back from Robot.
We ain't seen him since episode 2, have we?
No.
Nope.
It's like, I thought I'd pop in at the end just to watch him regenerate, you know.
But quite right, too. It's right that he's there.
And yeah, you could almost foresee this as an ending of Doctor Who where he just doesn't come back, and it's this scene between the two of them.
It could have, it could have been.
Yeah. I think another reason the brig comes back, I think Terence wanted him there to witness the regeneration so he didn't have to go through the whole Spearhead from Space.
Oh, it's the drama. I saw it happen this time.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if there's a bit of dodgy direction there, because she's doing this thing with her eyes as if she can see the TARDIS going across, but it just materialises.
I think it's more that she's sort of hearing the noise and trying to work out where the noise is coming from. Look at him. He looks. Oh, Terry Walsh, one last time.
It's no way Pertwee was fooled like that, is there? He's like, get me my cushion. Okay, thank you.
He does look ghastly, doesn't he?
He does.
What's lovely, I love how he tries to comfort her and he dies doing that.
And that's his last thing.
But do we ever see any other Doctor actually expire like this? Like we get the build up in with a lot of Doctors.
Yeah, but we don't get I guess it's only Paul McGann, but we're only told that he's dead.
And then the camera goes in really gently.
Yeah. And he's doing that thing where he's touching her cheek, like in Death of the Daleks, that bit that you love, Joe.
Yeah. There's no music here as well. It's completely silent, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh.
And look at him. He's acted his socks off there.
He's actually dead.
Yeah.
Oh, this is funny now, though. The fella beams in.
Uh-huh.
Hello. I'm just going to give it a little push. Oh, she's doing the eye thing again.
She is, yeah.
Fraser, do you find this quite moving?
Yes. It's good, isn't it? It's...
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's because none of it is down to effects. It's all down to performance.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's kind of something that don't really date.
And it's the script in as well.
Mm.
And the acting is absolutely superb. Liz Sladen is obviously selling this. Yeah.
When she says, please don't die, she's like choking a sob, isn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Listen to us.
She always thinks he's dead.
We're all being very respectful of this scene, aren't we?
Yes. Well, yeah, because, you know...
Oh, then this is just to remind us, this is Doctor Who. We've had that very moving scene and he's going on about bloody crystals and metabelius and all that.
But you've got the break there. Who's like, thank you, Miss Smith. That clears everything up.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all you need, isn't it, from Nick Courtney? It's a sardonic one-liner.
Mm-hmm. Well, here we go again.
Yeah. Goodbye. Look after him. Oh, sorry. I'm being a bit here racist. Sorry.
Look, Brigadier, look. I think it's starting.
What's that? Blue Peter, they need the set. Let's get out of here, quick.
And it's Tom!
Hey! Hey! I mean, it is a lousy fade, isn't it?
Like... I mean, as regenerations go, it's as basic as you can make it. But
I think the lead up to the regeneration is what is the best. Yeah, in regeneration, yeah. It's probably the worst. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it's simple. It does the job. But it's not massively, it's not a massive technical exercise, which considering it's Barry Letts is a bit of a surprise.
Well, yeah, and he does berate people like Paul Bernard for not like doing more visually interesting things mm-hmm. sometimes. And yeah. He is guilty himself occasionally.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, it works. And I think because you've had the build up, you don't need anything fancy.
No.
At that point, you've done.
Well, boys, we need to figure out our 9 fabulous things each. To recommend. Not each. It's I need to go to bed tonight, all right? I'll be a grumpy fuck at work tomorrow if we do 9 each. Let's start with Fraser.
I'm going to pick Tom Baker.
Oh, he was great.
That's one of his best performances. No, I'm going to say the chase scene in episode 2.
Oh, God damn it.
Because that's just, you know, 5 episodes worth of fun. Just, you know, the perfect sort of like little gift to Pertwee. There you go. Have a hovercraft, have a gyrocopter, have Bessie, have your Whomobile, and just have fun with it. And yeah, this fluff, it's nonsense, you know, it serves no purpose whatsoever to the plot, but it is just joyous to watch.
It's good fluff.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
To be completely obvious, the spiders are brilliant. I think the joy of giving them all female voices, I think, is something really special and works beautifully because it makes it such a different menace to anything else in the Pertwee era. And I think just that Doctor Who image of that publicity still of Pertwee and Sarah, with Sarah having the spider on her back, is so Doctor Who.
Is it what he's doing this? It's,
yeah. Yeah, and it's the one that was painted on the original book cover, and it's just one of those brilliant, wonderful Doctor Who images that was printed everywhere, and one of those things that you knew before you'd even seen it. And it's magnificent, that whole idea of the spider on the back, the giant spider that finishes Pertwee off, that's more powerful than all of them, and the fact that they all argue and bicker and there's politicking between them all is... Yeah, it's just really nicely done.
Big bugs just work, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again and again and again. Well, I'm so pleased I get to say this one. We've gone through the difficult first 2 years of the acidic arsehole Third Doctor. We've come a long way from season 7 to season 11. Mm-hmm. And I do think this showcases Pertwee at his best. I mean, we talked about in episode 6 alone what the ground that they cover. But like you said, Fraser, we still get to see him as a man of action. We get to see him having charming scenes with Lethbridge Stewart in episode 1. We get to see him very vulnerable in the middle there, where he's almost dead. I think it's a really great send-off for John Pertwee. And I really like the fact it's a bit like the 10th Doctor. We're a bit introspective at the 11th hour. Sorry, that's Matt Smith's story. We're at the end, we're a bit introspective and we're actually saying this is a flawed character and he's facing up to that fact and sort of bowing out with dignity. And I really like that.
Awesome. Good choice. Oh, it's me. I'm going to pick Jenny Laird.
Oh, no, I wanted to do Jenny Laird. Why, Fraser? Why? My husband...
Why? Just because she's given us so much fun as fans over the years, hasn't she? You know, we've all laughed and we've all had had a little snicker with Jenny Laird, and you know, she's got a prize named after her. She had a prize named after her, RADA of all places, and you know, she's the standard to which you can then hold up any other acting performance in Doctor Who. You know, you go, oh, them at Journey at the Centre of the TARDIS of rubbish. Yeah, 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 not Jenny Laird, though, are they?
Well, it's bad. The Jennies, isn't it? I think it's Jenny Laird and Jenny Thomason. It's the Jennies.
So, Jenny Laird is my second pick for just being memorable.
I shan't let you choose her, Fraser. I shan't, I shan't.
I shan't. Okay, I'm going to choose Richard Franklin and Captain Mike Yates, although he's only Mike Yates in this story, because one of the wonderful things about this era is the attention they've paid to the characters. And as Joe said, the Doctor has had a lot of attention here. And it's the fact that they go to they could have just written Mike off after Invasion of the Dinosaurs, but they give him a proper redemption and he comes good here. And he's the one who finds the initial problem, brings in Sarah Jane because he's not sure that the Doctor or the Brigadier will listen to him because of what's happened. And the warmth between the Doctor and Mike here is something that we've not really seen between the characters a lot of the time. And it's really lovely. And I think it's a really nice bit of writing and a nice bit of character work to have him properly redeemed and come good at the end of the era when they didn't need to.
I think you can trust no one finer than Dudley Simpson to bow out a Doctor. And what I love is that rattle-shaking thing he does with the spiders.
That's really good.
Which really makes those scenes where they leap really effective. But he does sort of some bombastic music when the Doctor's having his chase. Dudley Simpson's just brilliant. And he just knows how to score the show at this point. And this is another memorable score. So Dudley Simpson.
I'm going to pick Lupton. Because I think Lupton is a very...
In the cellar.
Lupton.
Clever
Lupton. Because he's obviously a master stand-in. You know, I said this in the first couple episodes. He's, you know, it's not the same story that they would have used to bow the master out with, but he is very much a master stand-in character here, which works to a certain extent, doesn't, but he is still a really quite fleshed out character. You know, he's a nobody man who's just, you know, bitter with life because he hasn't had, you know, hasn't had the recognition he feels he should have. And, you know, he's got some skills and abilities, but ultimately he just does get sidelined and has a very ignoble death at the end.
Yeah, I don't think we've had a villain who's quite so prosaic and basic as
uncharismatic
middle manager who's not been promoted. I mean, for Doctor
He's
Who, that's
pathetic,
that's low scale.
He?
He's absolutely pathetic.
But kind of frightening because of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like he wants to take over the world because he got made redundant.
Basically,
that's so...
No, it's a better motive than we've had for some Doctor Who villains, let's be honest.
So, you know, he's kind of he's relatable, and I think he does make quite an engaging and an interesting character.
Mm-hmm. I think he's very well played by John Durf as well.
Yeah, I do too.
And he's clever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Clever Lupton.
So for my final choice, this is a difficult one, but I think I'm going to go for those early scenes between the Doctor and the Brigadier, because I know, Joe, you said that we've seen the evolution of the Third Doctor throughout this era, but this is the moment, I think, where the Brigadier becomes the Doctor's best friend. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that will continue, because there's no reason for the Doctor to keep coming back to Earth at this point. the only reason he comes back is because, he'd hate to admit it, he's formed a real bond with this group of people, and he really likes the Brigadier. And we've gone from him calling him Brigadier to calling him Alistair, which we've not had before. And they're going for nights out together. And are they doing this all the time, or is this a special occasion? Are they going out for dinners? Are
they're
they
going dating out for... at this point. You know? This is the real unit dating, isn't it?
But that absolute warmth in those first few scenes where they're in the lab and it's all very informal, and they've been to the theatre, they're following up the experiments, and there's none of that baiting of the Brigadier that has happened before, and treating him, he's not treating him as silly or not understanding. There's a meeting of minds that it's like they've come to terms with this, and actually they just really like each other. And that's why the Brigadier is there at the end as well, because it's absolutely right. He was there right at the start, not believing that this was the Doctor. And then he's found the most doctory doctor that he will ever know.
And of course, he's got to be there at the end to see it, because we can't go through all that again next week. Because,
yeah, exactly. And it's absolutely earned by Nicholas Courtney. And I think it's a lovely, lovely performance in this story. And we just get Doris mentioned and all those little hints of other lives that go on.
How we go from, I don't know, the end of Inferno, where he's like, you know, I've had enough of this pompous military idiot, to...
And I'm stuck here on Earth with you Brigadier.
To, like, you saying this, where he's in the theatre and he goes a little bit too much. Hey, Alistair. It's lovely. Well, my last one then is going to be how cleverly and subtly I think this story pulls together the era. Not just the unit presence, not just the big action set pieces, not just the mention of Joe Grant in the first episode, not just the mentions
of Carnival of Monsters.
Yeah, not just the mentions of the Doctor's backstory that was in the Time Monster, not just all of those actors that we've seen throughout the era, not just giving the Doctor genuinely thoughtful moments, which Pertwee had throughout his run. Like, there's so many. The only thing that is missing is Roger Delgado. And I kind of almost wish there was a reference. I can understand why they didn't do it, because the Fella had passed.
Or Liz.
Liz as well.
Yeah. But for the most part, this really is pulling in everything. And it's not sort of a showy way like you'd get in the new series.
No. Well, you think when before has... It's very rare that the Doctor references his old companions after they've gone, let alone have a letter from Joe?
Yeah,
you know? And that feels something special, like this is bigger than we normally get, because you don't normally get that callback. Yeah. Because the show's...
The book's even better, though, isn't it?
That sequence at the start. And imagine if they'd filmed that. Imagine if they'd just done that with Joe and Cliff.
Just go down some forest in England and film it, you know? I love as well that letter that they read out. You can absolutely hear Katie Manning.
Either it goes or they go.
So my last thing then is going to be Barry Letts.
Oh, yes.
Because, you know, we've talked so much about this being the end of Pertwee era and, you know, John Pertwee even, but this is the end of Barry Letts and Terence Dix's time. And more than any, you know, Terence Dix will come back and write, you know, stories for the show again. You know, Barry Letts himself will come back and, you know, executive produce.
Yeah. Well, direct Android Invasion as well.
Yeah. But, you know, as a swan song for Pertwee, it's fantastic. But as a swan song for Barry Letts as well.
He gets to write, produce, direct.
He is the auteur.
He is the auteur. So he gets to put in everything he wants to put in. So all of that stuff that you mentioned, Joe, the, you know, tying up the year, a lot of that is down to Barry Letts. You know, casting, you know, actors that Pertwee's got on with, and you know, giving him a little treat in that respect of, you know, getting him to work with people that he likes again, and getting to do stuff he likes to do again. But it's a little treat for Barulet as well. You know, he gets to write about Buddhism. Mm. You know, he always wanted to be more of a director, so he gets to direct. You know, and we've talked about like the script and the direction falling flat a little bit at times. But you know, this isn't going to be the best, you know, story written by Barulet or directed or produced. But it just feels like the complete package, because it is. Because he's doing everything, so yeah, it feels
quintessential Barry Letts.
Yes, it's
absolutely,
it's,
and I
it's
think
Pertwee is Pertwee, but it's the Lettiest Letts as well.
And I think for Pertwee, having Barry direct his last story is absolutely perfect, because fitting. No one else is going to quite get it in the way that Barry did, and I think that's a spot on piece of work from Barry Letts to say, look, it's going to be all right, John, because I'm going to be here. Look, I'm writing it and I'm going to direct it. So whatever happens, you'll be looked after.
Exactly.
I think I'd say this is a massively flawed story. And I use the phrase, it isn't the best directed and it isn't the best written. But within those six episodes, you do have some of the very best moments in the John Pertwee era.
Yeah.
And I think his death at the end is possibly the best moment of the era.
Other than making him march round.
Well, look, boys, I mean, it's been 8 bloody months. I can't remember what we said we were going to be doing next.
Well, we did 2 in between, didn't we? So...
Oh, I know where we're going next.
Where are we going next, Joe?
We're
going
to redo a story that's already been done and do the PG-13 version. A commentary so disgusting that Sai refuses to listen to it. So he's now redoing it just so he can listen to it. Fraser's looking confused, Sai. You better give him a quote.
Well, I guess we're going to the death zone on Gallifrey.
As easy as pie. As easy as pie.
That's what he said.
Fraser, don't you remember talking about doing this one?
I still don't know which story it's on about.
What? It's the Terence Dixiest Dix story that there ever was.
Featuring Doctors 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Oh, he's doing it on purpose.
But the Dixiest Dix is Ambassadors of Death, and I've done that one.
No, that's the Hulkiest Hulk.
Now, we were going to do this for the anniversary, but that's long past
but
now.
But we did a lot for the anniversary.
We absolutely did.
By the time we get round to another one, it'll probably be the next anniversary.
So coming in 20... What is the next anniversary?
2035. 33.
The Five Doctors at this time featuring of night. Simon Hart, Fraser Henry and Joe Ford. We'll reconvene for that one, and I know we'll have fun with it as well. I don't think it's going to be too much of a hardship for any of us to rewatch that. I've
probably done another 12 versions by then.
You can all once again tell me just how amazing Peter Moffat's direction is.
It's the Moffat.
Go on, say it.
I don't think I can even get those words out.
Fraser?
It's the Moffiest Moffat.
I'll cut it right there.